hello. You're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies. And sometimes we talk about other stuff. My name's Erin, and how could you believe a child?
And my name's Erin, and even vultures have to eat.
Oh, hey. Wow. We're asking the real questions here today. How could you believe a child, especially when it's in this week's topic, the children's hour?
I would like to think that we can believe children very frequently. this movie, I think, tests a lot of people with that. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie's about cancel culture.
Stop. Shut up.
This movie's about getting canceled on Twitter.
Oh my God. Stop.
Okay, I'm sorry. No,
you're funny. It's fine.
I was going to say that there's going to be a 2023 remake where it's this girl named Mary canceling her teachers on Twitter.
Oh my God. A lot of people, okay, I'll say this very quickly and then we gotta get into like details and shit, but a lot of people on Letterboxd want to kill Mary. I'm like, y'all need to calm down a little bit. I do want to talk about Mary, just not yet. That was just like one of the first things I saw, like before I even watched this movie. I was like, I'm gonna check Letterboxd just to see if people liked it or not and to see if I need to prepare myself for anything. And like almost all the reviews are like Mary die challenge, let's kill Mary. I'm like, oh my God, calm down, y'all.
She's like 12.
Okay, anyway, The Children's Hour is a movie that I've been wanting to watch forever, that we've had on our to-do list like since we started Gaze Gaze. But I think it's one that we kind of put off because we knew it was going to be about homophobia and we knew it was going to be kind of heavy, until it was recommended to us recently by Alpaca and we decided to just roll with it. And I'm so glad we did, because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. I thought this was great. Just like some really unbelievably good performances by everybody.
Good. I feel like it has great imagery, great performances, some very interesting theming. It's not overly critical of LGBT people. It is more just like a very harsh representation of a very harsh reality, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you can just turn it off before the last like 5 minutes. Don't worry about it.
Oh, the Hays Code.
Oh, the Hays Code. We'll talk about it. And I actually mean that. I that's like my catchphrase on this show. I'll be like, we'll talk about it. And then like 50% of the time we actually go into it.
But today, we actually will. We can't avoid talking about the Hays Code today. Would you like to give content warnings?
Sure. So I think the main ones for this movie are homophobia and also suicide. There is also a single spanking in this movie, which I would say is child abuse.
Yes. Yeah, personally. The way that it's depicted, absolutely. I definitely do think that child abuse is a theme, if like a little bit of an unspoken one. And also when we say homophobia, both internalized and externalized homophobia, right?
Yes.
Because there's a lot about identity formation in this movie as well.
Yeah. So.
And I can give a quick summary of the plot for those of you who may not have seen it. I say quick, but this is actually going to be pretty long because The Children's Hour, a film released in 1961, it was originally based on a stage play of the same name that was written in the 1930s. And because it was based on a stage play, and especially as like an earlier film, it's very, very dialogue heavy. And there are a lot of like little plot points that you have to be paying close attention to while you're watching.
Yeah, I wrote the summary as I was watching this, and then Erin helped me cut it down because it was too long. But like literally there were moments where I was like looking at my phone because I'm typing, and I was watching this with my girlfriend, and she was like, no, we have to pause and go back because you just missed something important.
Yeah, that is true. I I feel like when I was watching this, I was paying such, like, rapt attention that I didn't realize that I was, like, completely hunched over for, for a lot of the movie. And I exited the film with back pain. Okay, so anyway, the summary is going to be a little bit lengthy, but let's just get into it.
Yeah.
So Karen and Martha are two very close friends who run an all-girls boarding school together. At the school, they also employ Martha's Aunt Lily, who's a failed stage actress who's always been very hard on Martha. Martha is single, and Karen is dating a local doctor who's named Joe. Karen has turned down Joe's marriage proposals multiple times in their relationship, each time saying that she needs a little bit more time to support Martha while they establish the school together. But after a year of hard work, the school is finally starting to make money, and so Karen accepts Joe's proposal, and they agree to marry at the end of the school year. When Karen tells Martha the news, Martha becomes upset and they have a small fight, but they quickly make up. Karen kisses Martha on the cheek, and one of their students, Mary, sees this kiss, but she didn't hear the context beforehand about Karen's engagement to Joe. Now, Mary is seen by the school as somewhat of a problem child. She has a history of lying to all of the adults around her, which leads Karen and Martha to regularly restrict her privileges, like home visits, recess, etc. And when she's been punished, Mary throws temper tantrums, and she says that she has pains in her chest and in her stomach. After one such tantrum, Mary pretends to have a heart attack and die, which prompts Karen to call Joe to perform a medical exam. Mary is actually completely fine and healthy, but seeing Joe at the school puts Martha in a really bad mood, and it causes her to have a fight with her Aunt Lily. Lily says that Martha's disinterest in men and her jealousy of Joe are both unnatural, and Martha fires Lily on the spot. Mary's roommates overhear this conversation because they're eavesdropping, and they repeat what they heard back to Mary about Martha having unnatural urges and a lot of jealousy towards Joe. Mary's grandmother then picks Mary up from the school. Now, Mary hates school because she's often punished, and she's actively seeking a way to get out of being in school. So she tells her grandmother that Karen and Martha are in a relationship, and she embellishes some actual facts, like the kiss and Martha's fight with her aunt. Mary has been reading erotica in secret, too, so she's able to whisper some, like, lewd details to her grandmother, and that only makes her lie that much more convincing, because her grandma's like, how could a child know such details about intimate relations? Mary's grandmother meets with Martha's Aunt Lily. Lily does not say that Karen and Martha are dating, but she does reiterate that she believes that Martha's behavior is unnatural, and Mary's grandmother is validated by this. She decides to unenroll Mary from school, and she also tells all of the other parents and guardians about Martha and Karen's presumed lesbian relationship. Every single parent quietly unenrolls their child until there are no children left enrolled in the school. Karen finally pressures one father to admit that he heard from Mary's grandmother that the two women were in a relationship, and that's why he has chosen to unenroll his daughter. Meanwhile, one of Mary's classmates, Rosalie, temporarily stays with Mary's family while she's waiting for her parents to come pick her up. Mary blackmails Rosalie into corroborating her lie about Karen and Martha's relationship, and she says that she'll call the police and have Rosalie arrested if she does not go along with the lie. Meanwhile, Mary's grandmother invites Joe over and tells him that he can't marry Karen because there's something very wrong with her. She's about to tell him her suspicions about Karen and Martha when the two women arrive to confront her about the rumors. Mary's grandmother doubles down, and she says that the women are a danger to children. Karen and Martha deny the allegations, and they insist that they will take her to court over this. Mary's grandmother does not believe them, and she begs them not to take her to court because she does not want the two women to publicly ruin their reputation by being outed as lesbians in the news. Karen and Martha suspect that Mary's behind the whole rumor, and they question her. They catch her in one lie, and then that allows them to poke some holes in some of her other lies. Mary then breaks down and starts crying, and she calls on Rosalie to confirm her lies. She blackmails Rosalie again, and Rosalie breaks under the pressure and says that Mary has been true the whole time. We then cut in a time skip to Karen and Martha sitting sadly in the abandoned school. They have lost their court case against Mary's grandmother, and they have no hope for reopening the school's doors. People now drive by just to stare at the two of them like they're freaks. Martha says that it'll be okay once Karen gets married, but Karen says that she's not sure what she wants in life anymore. Martha's Aunt Lily then unexpectedly returns, saying that she's been on tour,
but in reality, she's just come back because she's broke. Martha and Karen are furious because she wouldn't pause her tour to testify in court on their behalf, and the fact that the two women had no witnesses was the primary reason that their case was dismissed. Martha tells Aunt Lily that she must catch the next train out of town. Joe then shows up, and he asks both Karen and Martha to move to the countryside with him, but Karen knows that he doesn't really want to leave. The two squabble, and Joe finally asks if she and Martha really did have relations. Karen says no, and Joe says that he believes her, but Karen asks to spend time apart, saying that she won't be able to trust that he truly does believe her. She then tells Martha what happened, and Karen says that she and Martha should run away together. Martha then says that she can't do that. She breaks down completely, saying that her love for Karen is just like how the other people had said it was. She says that hearing the rumors made her realize that she was in love with Karen, and she had repressed the idea until she heard it spoken by someone else. Meanwhile, Rosalie's mother has discovered that Mary has blackmailed her daughter. She takes Rosalie to Mary's house, where the lie is revealed to Mary's grandmother. While Martha is having her sexuality crisis, Mary's grandmother knocks on their front door. She tells the women that Mary was caught in the lie, and she has contacted the judge, and he's going to overturn the ruling and issue a public apology. She then asks if there's anything else that she can do to help the two women. Karen says that there's nothing she wants from them, and then Martha begins to laugh hysterically at her attempt at an apology. I would speculate that she's also laughing hysterically at the idea that they're not going to be outed as lesbians when she herself has just outed herself as a lesbian to Karen, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, damn, if I had just held out for like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Karen then tells Martha that the two women can start over and that they can run away together and truly just go and be on their own. But Martha asks if she can go to sleep. Karen decides to take a walk, but Aunt Lily calls her back saying that she can't find Martha. Karen then sees something in Martha's bedroom window, and she rushes back. She breaks down Martha's locked door to find that Martha has hanged herself. At Martha's funeral, Karen and Aunt Lily are the only ones that get close to her casket. Everyone else stands far back, including Joe. After Martha is laid to rest, Karen walks out alone with her head held up.
Man.
I know.
It's good, though. It's like, fuck.
I know. Do you want to start by talking about production and then we can get into talking about each of the characters?
Yeah. So there's a couple things going on here. William Ryer, who is the director of this film, actually initially did an adaptation of The Children's Hour in 1936, but it was called These Three. So even though it's based off of The Children's Hour, the plot is actually a lot different, with Martha being in love with Joe and Mary's lie being that the two of them are having an affair. And Martha does not die at the end of this movie because there's no reason for her to die because she's not a lesbian. This adaptation was done this way because at the time, the Hays Code was really, really strict and you just like weren't allowed to have any representation or even the implication of quote unquote sexual perversity, i.e. being a homosexual at all. But the Hays Code had loosened up at least like a little bit by the time that this adaptation of The Children's Hour was in production. So they were able to actually like do a pretty accurate adaptation of the play. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, this was nearing the end of the Hays Code, actually.
Yeah. It was.
And it was also running concurrent with all of the lesbian pulp fiction movement, which was also pressuring a lot of the barrier gaze trope. We talked about this quite a bit in our episode on Carol, but Patricia Highsmith, who in 1952 is credited as writing The Price of Salt, which inspired the movie Carol, which is credited as being the first lesbian novel to have a happy ending in the English language. Because censorship laws in publishing and in media production in general had been so tight. So, you know, this was only 10 years after we got the first happy lesbian ending in literature, let alone in film. I feel like we still weren't at that place yet. And so a common way that queer authors got their work across during this era was basically to write an informative and or happy lesbian story that then ends with the last like 5 minutes or the last couple of pages of a book being like, and then they went to conversion therapy, or and then the lesbian died, and then, yeah. You know, and that was kind of like just asking your readership or your viewership to kind of look the other way and ignore that bad ending that was like legally required, right?
Right.
And I kind of get that vibe from the yeah. Children's Hour as well. And it is a very sad story, but it is one that wouldn't necessarily have to end with suicide, that could end in a positive way with Karen and Martha running off together and being happy. Because it's very obvious that the two of them are both interested in one another.
I know. I think so, too.
I think it's easy for straight audiences to turn the other cheek and not acknowledge Karen's repressed homosexuality.
Yeah.
But it's there, and it's very evident.
I mean, it's so funny, too, because, like, her boyfriend's like, please, I want to get married. And she's like, no. And then eventually what makes her be like, okay, we can get married is just like, she's like, I want to have a baby.
Yeah, that's like the only thing.
It's so funny too. I think initially she's like, I already have 30 children at my school.
Yes.
But yeah, I think the other reason though why Martha kills herself at the end of this movie is because in the Children's Hour play, Martha commits suicide at the end, which again was probably because of pressures from society of like, you can't have a play where a lesbian's alive at the end of it.
Yeah.
I think that the director wanted to make a really accurate adaptation of this movie, so he included that. And also, it's funny because I see this movie and I'm like, this is like textbook Hays Code. Of course, yes. It's going to be awarded the production code seal. But apparently, leading up to the final edit of this movie, there was like a lot of tension thinking that they wouldn't actually get the production code seal because there was too much lesbianism in this movie. I'm like, there's not enough lesbianism in this movie. But
yeah, but it wasn't. It's muddy, right? Yeah. That's the only way you can describe it. It wasn't firmly saying, oh, yeah, Karen is going to go off and get married to Joe.
Yeah.
At the end.
That's true.
And that does not happen at all. And it also wasn't clear enough in outlining Martha as being like a bad person for what she was yeah. going through either. Which I think is another thing that often happens with the Hays Code era works.
Yeah, she's incredibly sympathetic.
One thing that I did read, though, was that there is supposedly this idea that both Karen and Martha can be interpreted as being heterosexual if you interpret Martha as succumbing to the results of gossip and, you know, the, like, idea that if someone speaks it enough, it will become true. The idea that, like, she wasn't gay until she heard the gossip, and that's what made her gay.
Right.
Or caused her to doubt herself to a point where she created a false reality, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think is probably another reason that they tried to argue that this was compliant with restrictions.
Because that also goes with the, like, the scene before she confesses is Joe being like, hey, I believe that you guys aren't lesbians, but, like, I just want to ask, are you not, you're not lesbians, right? So he's succumbing to all the gossip too.
Yes, exactly.
I feel like almost actually, like, having Martha take her own life at the end, like, confirms that she, like, had it figured out. Like, as awful as that sounds, I'm like, if she was straight, she would have been like, oh my goodness, it was just a misunderstanding, and not like, oh God.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do think that you're right about that.
The Children's Hour, the play, has almost exactly the same plot. And the only difference is that Martha kills herself with a shotgun at the end of it after confessing to Karen that she's in love with her and having Karen kind of blow her off about it and be like, yeah, I love you too. Like, that's not weird. And this happens before Mrs. Tilford shows up to apologize about the fact that Mary had made this holding up, which I think works actually pretty well for a play. Oh, and then the other thing is the play was inspired by a true crime incident. Oh my God. That took place in 1810 in Edinburgh, Scotland. And again, like a very similar situation, a student accused her school headmistresses of having an affair in the presence of their pupils. And the school was promptly abandoned by all of its students because of this. But the two women, they sued and eventually won their case. But given the damage that it had done to their lives, the victory was considered very hollow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to hear how you feel about Mary.
Yes, I was just going to say, let's talk a little bit about each of the characters. We can start with Mary, then we can go on to Karen and Martha. Mary is an interesting character to me because I feel like when you're seeing like a child depicted as being like evil or malevolent, it's often in the context of a horror film these days.
Yeah.
But this is also coming from an era where there was much less of an understanding about children's behavior and children's trauma responses as well. When I see Mary today as a child who lies like constantly and is engaging in a lot of like attention-seeking behavior, to me it reads like there's something going on here that Mary like clearly does not feel loved and like understood and supported in her environment.
Yeah.
And the response to that, like all of the adults take to that, is that they try to offer it to some degree, but not to the extent that it meets her needs, obviously. Like, I feel like there's the scene, right, with Karen when she's first trying to get to the bottom of why Mary is lying. Mary brings flowers that she found in the trash to Aunt Lily, and Karen catches her in this. And she's like, "Now, Mary, like, why would you lie?" And Mary's like, "I didn't lie. I was telling the truth." And Karen is basically just like, "Well, if you don't lie, then we'll like support and love you and we'll help you figure out what to do next." But Mary just doubles down, obviously, and there's no other like action that she could really take in that moment. And I think that a lot of the viewers that I was seeing on Letterboxd just get the idea, right, that like some children are just evil and awful. This is why we gotta like hate kids. It's like, no, there's like clearly something the fuck else going on here. And one of the things that stuck with me the most in watching this movie was Mary's face when her grandmother found out that she was lying.
Yeah.
That's the face of a kid who knows that they're about to have a hell to pay, right?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think that Mary was doing this for nothing. I do think that she felt unsupported in her environment, and I don't know that there's anything that the two women could have done to make that better. But also, it clearly wasn't the right environment for her, and it's sad that it had to go down this way. You know, those are my Mary thoughts.
That's fair. I guess it's interesting because her guardian is her grandma, so it does seem like maybe there's something going on potentially with her parents is kind of what I interpreted.
Yeah.
And also, like, I guess boarding school in America is seen a little bit differently than it is in other countries. I guess in other countries, it's supposed to be kind of like prestigious to go to one. Mm-hmm. But in America, the idea is we're going to ship you off to a boarding school because we don't want to look at you and we hate you or like whatever.
Yeah.
So the fact that she's like at a boarding school and not with her parents or even her grandmother gives the idea that she is kind of unwanted in that way. So I did think that that's why she was acting out. But she does some shit.
She does some shit that is unacceptable, obviously.
It's aided by the fact that her actress is so good.
I know.
Oh my God.
She's so cute, too.
She's so cute. And there's all these, like, shots of her with her, like, eyes lit up. And they're all, like, big and wet from her crying. And, oh my God, she's killing it. I'm pretty sure... I didn't write this down, so I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think this was her first role in a movie, because she's just 12.
Yeah, no, she did great.
She was so good.
She really played the part. When they're in the car and she's like, "I have more information, but I must whisper it. I do not know why, but I must whisper it." So good. So bad.
But yeah, even... She very clearly wants to be around her grandma. She, like, misses her grandma. But there are multiple moments showing her being naughty. Like, in the opening sequence, she has like a frog or something in her hand, and she like gives it to another girl during this musical performance, which causes that girl to shriek.
That was Rosalie.
Oh, it was Rosalie.
Yeah, she's been tormenting Rosalie this whole movie.
No. And then when she goes for an outing with her grandma, as they're driving back, the grandma is like clearly very annoyed with her. And she's like, I'm so sorry I hurt your feelings, grandma. I did not mean to.
Yeah.
But yeah, kids don't act out for no reason.
Exactly.
But it did seem, my interpretation of it was, she is being neglected in some way by being sent to this boarding school and not being seen by her parents and getting this like attention that she very clearly needs. But she is then, she's like, oh, if I lie, then I don't have to go to school anymore. And she's willing to kind of throw two people under the bus in order to not have to go to school. But kids don't understand consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very much thinking, like, how can I get out of school and not, what impact will this have on Karen and Martha?
Yeah. And but like at that age, like your brain has not fully formed and cannot really understand consequences, especially long-term ones.
Exactly. Man, this was kind of the era for boarding school depictions in queer media, right?
Oh, yeah.
While we were watching this, I was just thinking, so if you are a recurrent listener, you might know that I am a huge fan of vintage manga, particularly from the 60s through the 80s. And there's so much queer manga from that era that like really focuses on boarding school dynamics and really romanticizes boarding schools, typically for relationships in between students.
Yeah.
But it was just interesting to see the similar setting. As I was watching it, I was like, man, Hagi Omoto would have loved this one. I wonder if she's seen it.
Yeah. This gave me, like, as it was starting, I was like, is this going to be like Heart of Thomas? Because I didn't know the plot. Yes. which also has suicide in it, but it's a little bit different circumstances.
Yeah. I also think about Cruel God Reigns.
Yeah.
I think about Onisame-e.
Oh, yeah.
And Claudine as well.
Oh, yeah.
Both of which also end in suicide and are based in boarding schools.
Yeah.
We're going to do Onisame-e later this year. I'm excited about it.
Oh, wow.
Or early next year. I'm excited too. More boarding school content. More suicide content.
Woo!
God.
This is the gays' gaze.
Yeah, sadly.
I guess I didn't really know the plot of this movie going into it, but you had described it to me before. And I will admit that I kind of thought it was initially going to be like, just not knowing anything about this or when it was created, I thought it was like, oh, these two teachers, their students think they're in love, but then they are in love. And then their students, they're like, that's okay. Like, I'm happy that you're our two gay moms.
Oh, I wish. If they made it today, that would be what would happen.
Yeah, I would hope so. Because then they can adopt Mary and Mary can finally get attention from two parental units.
Oh my god, they're going to miss Honey Her.
Oh my, they're going to miss Honey Her. Fuck. That's dead on.
That would make this better. That's the thing about Matilda. I know that Roald Dahl is like kind of a creep or whatever, but Matilda is so good.
Yeah.
What did Roald Dahl do again? Now I have to look it up. He did something bad.
All those fucking...
Me searching Roald Dahl controversy.
Children's authors.
He was an unpleasant man who wrote macabre books.
Wait, was he just unpleasant though, or was he bad? This is cancel culture at work.
Oh, he was anti-Semitic. He hated Jewish people.
God damn it, of course he did.
I'm so sorry. All right, we gotta edit all that out, but...
I guess that makes sense. He does do a lot of shit with witches in his books.
And that's very obviously, yeah, just anti-Jewish.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that shit sucks. Anyway. That's what it was. His family has apologized for it. Obviously, there's nothing you can fucking do. But yeah, he was a routine Hitler apologist as well.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ. Who fucking apologizes for Hitler? I guess anti-Semitic people.
Roald Dahl does.
Yeah, Roald Dahl does. Damn.
Yeah. He's also apparently a known misogynist.
That checks out. The only thing I ever knew about him is just he hates TV so much.
Yeah. His critics, including Donald Trump Jr., say that Roald Dahl is facing cancel culture.
He's let him speak. Let him say that Hitler was right.
Yeah, for real.
Oh my god.
Says the Trumps. Oh. Also, Roald Dahl's fucking dead. So
yeah, like, Roald Dahl's. Oh my god. Seriously. He's well, that was the same dead. Thing with people. Like they're canceling Dr. Seuss. It's like, no, they're just taking out the books that had like racist depictions in them.
I wish you could have been in the car when Hoops, when we were driving to Michigan, and Hoops found the trending list of authors that had been canceled on Tumblr. Mm. I don't know if you heard anything about that.
Mm-mm. What is this?
Hoops found the list and we were like fucking losing it because it was like, we got to, she was like reading it out loud and it was like, okay, Bill Burrows, and it was like canceled for murder. And we were like, well, he did.
Canceled for murder?
He did like kind of assist in the murder of, do you remember the movie Killing Me Softly? Right? We love that movie with Allen Ginsberg, Daniel Radcliffe, and Lucien Carr, played by Dane DeHaan.
And oh, yeah.
The two of them are in love, right? And it's like, okay, well, Bill Burrows kind of assisted in that murder, so maybe that's what he got canceled for. We Googled it. Nope, he killed his wife. Valid reason to be canceled. And then we kept scrolling, and it was like, Shakespeare is canceled for racism. And it was like, you're going to cancel Shakespeare for racism in 2022? If Shakespeare was alive today, he would love getting canceled.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Let's be real. He would make a whole play about how fun it is to be canceled and about how no one can cancel him. Like, that's the whole thing, right?
For sure. Wait, okay, I'm so, I have to backtrack. Is it being canceled if you murdered somebody?
If you kill your wife, is it being canceled? And it was like also...
I don't think so. I don't think that's what that means.
Directly after that, it was like Virginia Woolf canceled for pretending to be a foreign diplomat. Who the fuck cares? Bill Burroughs killed his wife.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Oh my god. Wait, I don't... Well, you know, the culture these days, women can get canceled for anything. J.K. Rowling got canceled just for hating all those trans people.
Right. Okay.
That's a joke, obviously.
here's my unsolicited opinion. I don't want to ruffle the listeners' feathers too much. I think that cancel culture is bunk in the way that, like, people should be held accountable for their fucking actions, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. There's no point in talking about cancel culture. It's so stupid. Yeah. I just think that, like, we should have open accountability for people when they do fucked up shit. Maybe someone who kills their wife shouldn't be allowed to do shit. But also, Bill Burrows is dead. Who cares? I don't...
Yeah.
All of these people are dead. Why are we canceling?
I don't know.
We can just stop recommending them.
A lot of the time, it's like, is this canceling? Or is just, like, taking a critical eye to books written by somebody who said that Hitler was okay and fine to kill all those Jewish people? You can then be like, oh, he's doing a lot of depictions of witches that feed into anti-Semitic images of Jewish people. And that's how it is. I don't know. And maybe like the guy who killed his wife, it's like, huh, he sure wrote a lot of stuff about killing his wife or something. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also think that, like, in a lot of ways, cancel culture doesn't really affect the people at the very top. Like,
it doesn't.
Guys who sexually assault people still get roles in Hollywood. And I do feel like Twitter mob mentality of like telling people to kill themselves is bad. For the record, but I do kind of feel like it's something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, please don't tell people to kill themselves in any context.
Yeah.
God.
I know. We can't be talking about cancel culture. I feel like you and me having this conversation about cancel culture is like when people get into like the pro-ship, anti-ship debate.
Oh my god,
it's like
no.
All of this shit is a pointless distraction from the harsh realities that are going on right now.
Oh my
we
god,
gotta just talk
real.
About something better.
It's so true.
Who the fuck cares? Anyway.
The children's hour. You want to talk about some themes?
Yeah, we talked about Mary. I want to talk about Martha and Karen.
Yeah.
particularly, let's start with Martha, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
So obviously the big theme in Martha's arc is repression. She has repressed her identity so far to the point that she only realizes it when it's spoken back to her and she can see herself reflected in it, right?
Yeah.
But we also see this through, like, little things throughout the entire movie. Frequently, we'll see Karen go outside while Martha stands inside and longfully looks out a window at her. We see this multiple times. Yeah. And it's very much the idea of, like, this is something that I'm gazing in on, that I, like, cannot quite reach, that I will have some distance from, as Karen has interactions that I will never be able to come close to having in my personal life. And I think that that is very clear theming in this movie, mm-hmm. That feels like absolute shit when we get to the end of the movie, when Karen asks Martha to run away with her and Martha's like, okay, well, just let me sleep. And then Karen goes on her walk, and when she comes back, she sees Martha hanging through the window.
I know.
And we get that parallel back as Karen is looking in through the window at something that she can never have, right?
Oh, fuck, you're so right.
That shit sucks so much. That shit hurted.
That shit hurted a lot. We'll talk about this in the morning, and just kidding, we'll never talk again.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
It still hurts.
But that, I think, is the clear moment where you see Karen starting to grapple with her internalization of her own identity. Because for Martha, it's repression, right? For Karen, it's almost like she recognizes it, but she's going to choose to ignore it.
Yeah.
At least that's my interpretation, because it's very obvious that she is not that interested in Joe. I think that she knows that. And I think it also isn't until Martha, just like how Martha's like, I didn't realize it until it was spoken to me. I think that Karen has a little bit of that moment too, where she really starts to realize it once it's spoken to her from Martha.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because she and the aunt are the only ones to get close to the casket at Martha's funeral. And then Karen walks out alone. It does almost seem like she's like, I'm not leaving with Joe. I'm not going to get married. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There is distance between them that's very obvious at the end.
Yeah.
And the fact that she walks out alone, head held up high.
Yeah.
Joe was like the crutch that was helping prevent her from recognizing that she was in love with Martha, right?
That compet.
Yep.
Gotta go find a boyfriend so I can get married and have a kid.
Yeah.
Even though I'm very obviously completely fulfilled with my quote unquote best friend at our school that we run together.
I'm trying to think of what else I want to say. Oh, wait. Speaking to repression and internalization, I think another big theme of this movie is just not having open communication and not talking about your concerns.
Oh, yeah.
And this is something that was actually mirrored in the actress's experience in producing this film.
Oh, really?
Yes. So there is a 1990s documentary called The Celluloid Closet that I've not seen in full, but that I watched some clips from. And the actress who plays Martha, Shirley MacLaine, I was going to say it's Shirley MacFarland. No, it's Shirley MacLaine. I'm glad I looked it up.
Seth MacFarland.
The actress who plays Martha, Shirley MacLaine, she was interviewed in this documentary about her experience filming The Children's Hour. And in that interview, she confessed that she and Audrey Hepburn never once had a conversation about the sexualities of their characters. They never talked about it. It was like something that was completely unspoken on set. And she kind of talked about how that actually mirrored the experience of the characters, that as they were going through this, right? Because they never once talked about how they were feeling with one another. And I think that it's just, it was a norm of the time, right? Where at a time when homosexuality is fucking illegal, how are you going to talk about it? Right?
Yeah.
Even if you were just playing a character, but you wouldn't be able to express how you were personally feeling. If you related to the character, you couldn't express that to your co-star who you were having a somewhat romantic relationship with on screen, right? But you couldn't talk about it as people, which is something that's really hard. So that's something that stood out to me.
Yeah, totally. And you heard about the celluloid,
The celluloid closet.
Yeah, from a Letterboxd review, right?
Yeah, that is where I first heard about it. So there's a Letterboxd user, Sally Jane Black, that left a very lengthy review that I thought was incredible on this film that talked about the celluloid closet and that comparison between film and real life.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that this Letterboxd review kind of focused on is that there's a destructive power to rumors, lies, and gossip, but that destructive power is something that is sourced by society's complete disgust with queer people, right? And the fact that you aren't willing to even talk about it, right? Because that's something else that happens, right? That you just can't have a conversation with. Mary must whisper the idea that the two women are in a relationship. None of the parents will tell Martha and Karen why they're unenrolling their children from the school. Mary's grandma can't tell Joe why she thinks it's a bad idea for Karen and Joe to get married, right? And it's like a sheer disgust in the idea of queerness that drives that, right? And we also see that when Martha actually admits to having feelings for Karen and she says, I feel so dirty.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is interesting, too, because, like, earlier in that scene, too, she had been, like, since they don't have any kids at their school anymore, she had been, like, is it time for my bath yet? It's, like, it feels like the only important thing I do all day.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I have something else I wanted to talk about, too, which is a much harder concept.
Sure.
And I think that this is a timely period for us to be watching The Children's Hour when we are currently faced with a lot of moral dilemmas about how schools quote-unquote indoctrinate children with LGBT ideology.
Yes.
There is a school near me where I live right now that has banned. This is going to sound insane, but it's true. Like, literally this happened. It's like right near me. The school banned teachers from having pronouns. Teachers are not allowed to say what their pronouns are in a class. You're not allowed to express what pronouns you use. What is required is that everyone makes assumptions. You're not allowed to express what you would like to be used.
Oh my God.
And this is because of parent pushback thinking that teachers were indoctrinating their children with LGBTQ ideology, right?
Oh my God. And
I think that this is such an active concern in politics in America right now.
Yeah.
I know that only about half of our listenership is actually from the US, but if you're not, something that's been actively going on here right now is that there have been so many laws about teachers providing education on LGBTQ identities, and in particular also about racial injustice as well. Yeah. And how it's not a teacher's place to provide an adequate history of America and its cultures, which is insane, obviously. But that is just like the fascism, if not fascism adjacent government that we're living under at any point here. You know, this shit just sucks. Like, I have no words for it, really, aside from just how bad it is and how obviously, we don't want to see ourselves still fighting the same fucking struggles that we were fighting 90 years ago. Let me reiterate, 90 years ago. Like, oh my God.
No, I totally agree. I mean, like, all the stuff about, oh, we can't teach children about U.S. history, including slavery, because what if they feel bad? It's incomprehensible. And also just like I think it was Texas recently that was like, we gotta teach both sides of the Civil War. And
yeah,
what?
Yeah, you have to have empathy for both sides of any movement. I can speak from my experience going to school in America that all of my history education stopped at 1940.
Yeah, yeah.
I never had any history education beyond 1940. And obviously, when you stop history education after 1940, you don't get to learn about the civil rights movement. You don't get to learn about LGBT advancements.
Yeah.
You don't get to learn about anything that's even relevant or recent to you understanding your own context in society, because that's the shit that is the most relevant today. Right?
Totally.
Instead, we spend all of our time learning about the Crusades. Like,
oh my God.
Fine, I guess.
Whatever, but yeah.
Yeah. We're going to stop right after the Holocaust.
Right? I mean, but then it's like, apparently, like, some kids aren't even learning about the Holocaust, which caused a trend on Twitter of people saying that the Holocaust wasn't real, which is, really bad.
I know. Yeah.
But yeah, going back to the point of like, oh, gay and lesbian teachers are going to indoctrinate our children. There was a post going around of an image of a person holding a sign. It was like priests in jail, and it said 6, and then it was crossed out and it said 8. And then it was like drag queens in jail, 0. And
oh my God.
I thought that that was a liberal type person holding up that sign to be like, drag queens are not a threat. I have recently learned it's actually a conservative person holding up that sign to be like, mm-hmm. look at all these priests unfairly in jail when all these drag queens go free, which is so bad.
Do you know how many contestants out of RuPaul's Drag Race have been arrested in recent years? Just saying. Because the answer is quite a lot of them.
Okay, I guess I should specify in prison for child molestation.
Oh, okay.
Yes, sorry. That's an important part of that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, more priests should be in jail, honestly.
Actually, yeah, a lot more priests should be in jail for that.
My God. It's really quite bad. I mean, and the Pope even conceded to that fact. I mean, yeah. not the fact that everybody, like a lot of priests would be in jail, but they were like, yeah, we concede to the fact that we have gravely mismanaged and caused abusers to exist with children. My God.
Anyway, yeah, it sucks that like this exact plot of the Children's Hour could happen today and could have somewhat of a similar outcome in a conservative area. Yeah. Legitimately, it could. That's not to say that there wouldn't be social media backlash from people that would support Karen and Martha, because right. there would be. But at the same time, in conservative areas of America, something like this is still possible today for a kid to make up a rumor about this and then for an entire like school to get shut down, for people to lose their jobs over something like this.
Yeah.
There is still a lot of fight to be had for LGBTQ rights in the States.
Yeah, I mean, there is... Like, there are so many examples of these that we can't really even go into detail, but there was that Texas teacher who lost her job because she had gay pride symbols, like, on her clothing and, like, around her classroom. And that happened mm-hmm. just, like, in April of this year. And it's ridiculous. Like, I hate that it's, like, at the point where, like, I feel like a couple years ago it was like, okay, like, you don't have to say, like, trans women are women, like... We all know that, like, it seems like it's kind of reductive and, like, there are bigger things that we need to talk about. But now we have to, like, I'm like, trans women are women. It's like, trans men are men. Like, gay people exist. I can't believe that we're at this point. It feels very horrific.
Yeah, it's very, very regressive right now.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of a very poignant movie to watch right now.
It's a good movie. It's very sad. Martha's coming out scene, one of the most heart-wrenching coming out scenes I've seen in cinema, honestly.
Yeah.
Only one that I can think of that we've talked about that compares is the coming out scene in Pariah, which different for obvious reasons, because it's not about, like, I am disgusted in myself, I can't believe this, but instead it's like, fuck you, Mom. Like,
yeah.
I'm gonna be gay. I don't need my mom in my life, which is like so much more of an empowering message, obviously.
Yeah.
But heartbreaking for different reasons, but similarly heartbreaking, obviously.
I know. I do love, too, Karen's reaction of Martha like breaking down and being like, I love you. And Karen being like, I love you. Like friends, like it's normal to like you.
Yeah.
And just kind of like really laying it on of, are you actually doing this, kind of is how I read the scene.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Like, do you actually want to go here? Do you want to take it here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we could just run away together and be two gal pals.
Yeah. Boston marriage?
Mm.
Perhaps. Are you familiar with the concept of the Boston marriage?
No, what is that?
The idea of the Boston marriage is when two wealthy women in like the late 1800s, early 1900s, when they would just go off and live together without men. And it was just, a lot of people thought of it as like, oh, they're just two best friends.
They're just gals
being
pals.
They don't need men because they're wealthy women and they can live together. The reality is that, like, obviously there were some women who literally were just friends, but there were also a lot of women who were gay and used this as kind of like a guise to not get in mainstream society societal trouble by being gay, right?
Yeah.
It's also obviously very important to note that this was something that was prominent amongst wealthy white women and wasn't possible in other identity subgroups in the late 1800s, especially while slavery was still legal.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
I can't do this anymore, Erin.
Yeah.
We've talked about so many negative things in this episode.
I know. And it's 90 degrees. I am sweating through my tie-dye t-shirt.
Do we got any good news?
This movie was good. I liked it. That's good news.
It was, yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that's true. I did really enjoy it. I thought it was a good watch. I would recommend it, definitely.
Yeah.
We haven't said that in a minute, I feel like.
Oh, maybe.
Because what did we do recently? We did Loveless, we did Ride or Die, we did...
we liked Wynonna Earp and Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon's always good.
Sailor Moon and Wynonna Earp were good, that's true. Yeah. But then Jupiter Ascending and Killing Eve.
Jupiter Ascending is good. oh god, Killing Eve. Jesus Christ.
I know.
Another thing that you should just turn off before the ending.
Yeah, for real. I'm excited for our next episode.
Yeah.
My friend from college, Jenny, who co-hosts Battle City Broads, a Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast with my friend Ellie, who just recently came on for the Sailor Moon episode. Jenny will be coming on to guest host with us while we talk about the manga Murcielago, which I have started reading and which is unhinged.
Ooh.
It's so wild. Have you started it yet, Erin?
I haven't, but I know the one. The little cute girl and then the scary girl.
It's like sex, drugs, rock and roll, murder, baby. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like they are having sex. They are killing escaped convicts. She is an escaped convict. It's like alternate reality future where like they have contracted one lesbian who's a serial killer to kill all of the guys that the cops can't catch. But she hates the cops because she's a serial killer. And and they gave her this little girlfriend who drives her getaway car for her. And it's just like, there's something new and crazy happening in every chapter, Erin. It's been good. I made it like 10 chapters in, but it is very long. So we have a lot of reading to do in the next 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
I think you'll like it.
I think I will, too. It looks fun.
The first page is like serial killer girl laying in her bed reading Playboy magazine with her dildo next to her. It's like, you're going to cold open like this?
Oh, my God. Absolutely incredible, let's be honest.
She is having lesbian sex in every volume.
Good for her.
It is written by man, and I think that that is palpable. However, it is still good.
Sometimes that's okay.
That's my Murcielago preview. If you're interested in reading it, it is very not safe for work, and it is on the internet in places if you search for it.
Cool. All right, we gotta wrap it up.
Yeah, we gotta end. Do you want to take us out?
Sure. Thank you so much for listening. If you feel like it, you can follow us on Twitter at GaysGays. And there you can see our updates for our upcoming episodes. And also you can slide into our DMs and give us any thoughts, ideas, or recommendations. Also, if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it. We would love to have you follow us also on whatever your favorite podcast app is. That's also very helpful for us. And finally, if you want, you can email us at erin@gaysgays.com. Again, to send us any thoughts, ideas, or recommendations. And if you email us specifically, we will send you a mystery attachment, which is potentially kind of ominous, but it's just, we'll send you a picture, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A fun, safe for work picture.
Yes. Yes. Oh, God. Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for allowing us to use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You can and should buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com, but you can also stream it on Spotify. Next week, we're going to do Murcielago.
Yep, with Jenny. Woo!
Next week, we're going to raid the Mar-a-Lago, just like that. Yeah, I did. Sorry.
Yeah. Thanks for this recent news. Man, we're talking a lot about modern news, cancel culture. We're getting political.
It's so bold. I'm going to say it. I'm not afraid. Gay people are real.
Yeah, so true.
I'm going to have to edit that out. It's so controversial. Sorry. Anyway, God.
All right. Well, till then, I'm Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And we're gay.
I must confess to you, Erin, I love you. Okay, bye.
Bye.